Scott Swift says he has dismissed Vice Admiral Joseph Acoin as commander of Navy's 7th Fleet. USA Radio News.
Allergies. Pollen in the air. Dogs in the house. Mold in the basement. Whatever triggers your allergy symptoms, it can really hold you back. Break through with Allegra 5-in-1 Relief. Allegra works fast, won't make you drowsy, provides 24-hour multi-symptom relief, and it's effective every day. Break through allergies with Allegra. Starts working in 1 hour. Use only as directed. Guaranteed or your money back. Visit Allegra.com.
Colonel Sanders from KFC here to talk about the good old days. Well, the good old days are still here in chicken form. Specifically, in KFC's original recipe fried chicken with 11 herbs and spices. Our delicious chicken is still hand-breaded and pressure-fried just like it was then. Get your fill with 2 pieces of my original recipe in a $5 fill-up with mashed potatoes, a biscuit, a cookie, and a drink at a KFC near you. KFC, it's still finger-licking good. At participating KFCs, prices may vary. Tax extra.
New sanctions being leveled against China in connection with North Korea. Here's Bill Zinfer.
The sanctions affect 10 entities and individuals who have alleged business ties to North Korea's missile and nuclear programs. The Chinese embassy in Washington released a statement opposing the sanctions and urged the U.S. government to correct what it called a mistake. If not corrected, the statement says it could affect bilateral cooperation on relevant issues.
ESPN is coming under fire after the network yanked an announcer from calling an upcoming college football game. ESPN announcer Robert Lee, who is Asian-American, was originally scheduled to announce the University of Virginia's first football game next week against William & Mary. The network says because of recent violence in Charlottesville, and because Lee shares the same name as Confederate General Robert E. Lee, they decided to switch him to another game because of the name. Democratic Congressman Rick Larson of Washington slammed ESPN, tweeting, "If this isn't the same Lee that led the Confederate Army, ESPN needs to reverse this idiocy." USA Radio News.
Everyone loves liberty, so why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty Health Share. Liberty Health Share is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Stop letting others tell you what to do. Call us at 855-58-LIBERTY for more information or check us out online at libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
Or state
a scary story out of New York as a man told a woman he was going.
Lawsuit has been settled where they've admitted they did something they were in the wrong.
The class action lawsuit filed against those companies and resort marketing group.
And a lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, "Well, I'd like her room to be gray." And the little girl said, "Mom, gray is the color of depression."
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Good afternoon. I'm Jeannie Murphy. This is Talented People. I hope you're having a great day. We have a special episode today talking about an author. His name is Joshua Rivadel, and he's going to be talking about Changing Minds, a couple books that he's got out, along with one of his authors, Joanne Diaz. But right now, if you happen to be listening in our area, I'm going to give you an update on the forecast. It is 87 degrees right now outside. It's mostly clear with a low about 60 tonight. Partly patchy fog before 8 a.m. on Thursday, otherwise mostly sunny with a high of 83. Chance of showers and thunderstorms mainly after 8 p.m. on Thursday night. Patchy fog, otherwise mostly cloudy with a low about 69. Friday, chance of showers and thunderstorms, then showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm after 9 a.m., patchy fog before 9 o'clock, otherwise cloudy with a high of 84, and then mostly cloudy with a low about 69 on Friday night. Chance of showers and thunderstorms again all day on Saturday, partly sunny if we're lucky with a high of 85, then a chance of showers before 9 p.m., partly cloudy with a low about 66 on Saturday night. Mostly sunny all day with a high of 84 on Sunday, and then Sunday night, partly cloudy with a low of 64. Mostly sunny again all day, 86 on Monday. Monday, and then partly cloudy with a low of 65. So stay with us. We're going to go to our real quick break, and then we're going to have our conversation with my guests.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Okay, welcome back to the show. This is Talented People. I'm Jeannie Murphy. Good afternoon. Joanne and Diaz and our guest Joshua Rivadel are on the line. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. This is Josh.
Hi, Joshua. And
hi.
Joanne?
I'm Joanne, yes. Hi.
Okay, well, it's nice to have you all calling in. Thanks so much for doing so. I'm going to just give a little bit of a bio here on Josh Rivadel. Basically, he's the creator and founder of Changing Minds, a mental health-based curriculum, and the I Am Impossible Project. He's trained in human capital management with the emphasis in coaching from NYU, and he's also trained in QPR, Assist, A-S-I-S-T. We're going to learn about that, actually. And the Teacher's Edition of Emotional Intelligence at Yale's University Center for Emotional Intelligence. He's the author of two books and has a third book out for release in November coming up, 2017. And he's spoken about suicide prevention, mental health, diversity, and storytelling across the USA, Canada, and the United Kingdom and Australia. So that's quite a bio there, Joshua.
We're glad. It sounds like it. My eyes start to roll in the back of my head when I hear my bio. I'm like, who wrote that? And it's part of that, I think, was me. So, we got some stuff going on. So it's cool.
And let me just introduce Joanne Diaz. She's a contributor to your second book, right? But if you could explain that for a second, then we'll just back up
third
and
book.
Go forward. Third. Okay. Go ahead and tell us about that.
Sure. So that book that's coming out in November is actually coming out in August. August 23, 2017, I had to change the dates a couple months back, and I guess it didn't get updated everywhere. But so with this upcoming book that's coming out, oh my gosh, 7 days, Joanne is one of our 50 authors, and there's 50 different stories, and they're all like 1,000 words apiece, so they're pretty short, 2 to 3, sometimes 4 pages. And it's all stories. This particular book is part of a series called The Impossible Project. And this one is all stories of people living with, managing, overcoming mental illness. And so Joanne talks about her postpartum, and then I have other people talking about schizophrenia, depression, panic attacks, and a few others, OCD, anxiety. And they're not super dark, though. They're very hopeful and challenging and interesting, and some are funny. And I'm really proud to have put together these 50 people. I happen to be one of them. I figured I might write a story about my depression. And so that's actually one of the fun ones. And this is the second book in the series, and we have an e-book series coming out alongside this book that Joanne is in called Lemonade Stand, and it has no specific theme. It's just kind of similar lines as the main book, but no theme. So there's blindness, there's assault, there's depression, there's fatherhood, that kind of stuff. So a guy raising triplets. So storytelling is really powerful for me, and collecting people's stories and reducing stigma around different social justice topics, I think, is really important so that we can have a much better place to live in this world and to make sure everybody gets the help that they need and they deserve.
It's great. I love those types of story. I like the books that are compilations because you get to see the different lenses and all the different situations. It makes everybody feel a little bit more comfortable with their own problems and challenges, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it does. It makes it easier for people to say, oh, hey, me too, instead of hiding like, oh, I've got diabetes or I've got schizophrenia. Like, you don't have to hide. Like, you're a human being just like the rest of us. And unfortunately, too many people hide and suffer in silence. Needlessly.
Right. Absolutely true. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about some of your experience as your training and everything that you've been doing throughout your life to get to this point. Tell us more about you.
Sure. So I grew up in New Jersey, right across the river from Pennsylvania in Trenton, and then moved to New York City at 20. And in between, I mean, I had a very tumultuous upbringing. I mean, we were super, like, religious, evangelical. I wasn't really on board with that, but there were some cool things about it. And my family just had a lot of secrets, and we looked normal, but there was a history of suicide in my family. My father's father took his life in the 60s when my dad was, like, 17, and his dad would have been almost 50, and that was complications of post-traumatic stress from World War II. But it was never something we talked about, and my mom told my sister and I, who are the two eldest siblings, there's a third one who's 5 years younger than me, the boy, and so so we never talked about it. My mom told my sister and I when I was like 12 and she was 13, my sister was 13, and it was like, okay, that's what happened to your grandfather, and run along and don't tell your dad or else he'll like be really upset and flip out, and because he flipped out about everything and was verbally abusive and physically abusive, especially to me. And so I got creative, I got into the arts, and that's, you know, I moved to New York City at almost 20 to be a professional actor. I got a chance to work. I was doing some playwriting, musicals. I got commissioned to write some stuff, things that actually got produced, Spanish-language Christmas musical called Rescatando la Navidad, which means Saving Christmas. That was fun. I got a chance to write that and produce and different things, and it was cool. And age 25, my dad was 60, and he and my mom were going through a divorce, because he wasn't a nice person, and they were unhappy for 29 and 364 days of their 30-year marriage. And so my mom decided to leave, and so he took a downward spiral pretty fast, and on the day that they were supposed to finalize their divorce, he took his life. And so that's two people now in that string, my grandfather and my father. And my response to that was creativity. I created a one-man show, think of Love Child of stand-up comedy and traditional theater, and I played 18 characters in the show that I wrote and sang a bunch in it, and it was really kind of me growing up, going into show business, butting heads with my dad, and then our relationship gets better as I become an adult, and then his suicide is at the very end. I just talk about it, how I felt about it. I mean, most of the show was a comedy, and then at the end it turns poignant, and I got a chance to do it in New York City about a year and 2 months or 3 months after he passed away, and got good reviews. People wanted me to do it in Philadelphia, a couple other places, and so my professional life was taking off. My personal life was taking a nosedive, and, you know, and I was going back to school, kind of transitioning out of acting at that point anyway for, you know, emotional intelligence and marketing and different things. I wasn't sure what I was going to do, but, and then the beginning of 2011, like, I was back in school, and like I said, my personal life was taking a nosedive, and so my dad was gone, my mom had sued me and my brother and sister for my dad's inheritance that he left the kids, us kids. And,
oh my God.
It was kind of normal, and yeah, and that was rough, and so I had no parents at that point, and my girlfriend of 6 years decided it was time to go as well, and I'd lived with her for about 5 and a half, so I lost three major people in the span of like 19 months, and I didn't know that at the time. I noticed now that a lot of major change all at once can be a catalyst for suicidal thinking. And on top of that, I was having these symptoms of something I was living with my entire life, but I didn't know it had a name or how to describe it, and it was depression. And but I still didn't know that's what it was called. So at this point, all those symptoms where I would be like sad for like a week or two, at different points in the year, like I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep, I would cry. This is the beginning of 2011. I couldn't cry. I mean, I would cry all the time. I lost a couple of the jobs that I had in the acting world, and lost all sense of self-esteem and self-worth, and I was isolating. And on top of that, in the beginning of this really the darkest six-week period that really started in January that year, I was thinking about suicide weekly and then daily and then hourly and then by the minute. Until I was hanging out of my fourth floor window in Manhattan, in Harlem, New York City, thinking about ending my life and getting really close. And I held myself there for a little over an hour, and then this voice kind of came to me inside my head. I don't know if it was God or the universe. I can't really explain it, but it said, Josh, go back inside and ask for help. And I thought, oh, I have no way. Nobody loves me. Nobody cares about me. All this stuff that wasn't true, but that was kind of like my depression and my crisis talking. So I held myself there for about another half hour, and I was getting pretty weak. Like, I was in physical and emotional pain just because I wasn't eating and, you know, and all the emotional stuff on top of it. So that voice came back and said, Josh, I don't think you want to die. I just don't think you want to feel like this anymore. Go back inside and ask for help. And so I held myself there for another couple moments, and then I went back inside and sat on my floor and cried, and it repeated this, I don't know if it was a prayer or a mantra or this like guttural cry to the heavens, but it was like, please help me connect to positive people, positive thoughts, and positive experiences. And I repeated that over and over again for almost 2 hours until I found the clarity and the capacity to reach out to somebody to ask for help, because I couldn't do this alone. And I ended up reaching out to my mom because I was a bit natal at that point. I was a baby. You know, I just didn't know where to go, what to do, and I wanted my mommy, and I wanted everything to be better. And in that call, you know, at first she was very judgmental and threw some religiosity at me, and I threatened to hang up. And after that, she became my mom again. And she listened. She didn't judge. She was empathetic. She made sure I knew where resources were and just kind of gave me a kernel of hope that I could, that grew every single day after that. And I got into therapy and I relied on her and some friends and ditched the negative people, hung out with the good people. And going through all this, I kind of felt like I needed to be in the service of others to feel whole again. And so I just was like, I was going to quit show business and I don't know, be a crossing guard or a life coach or something. I wasn't sure. And then I had this epiphany that I had this show that people were connecting on, this one-man show where people were coming up to me afterwards and saying, thanks for being so open and honest. It's been 3 years, 10 years, 4 years since my uncle, cousin, brother, whoever took their life, and we never talked about it. Thanks for doing that. And at the time, I was like, man, no, what? I'm just doing some theater. But I was being cool with them. And so fast forward, and as I was coming out of this crisis, I was like, well, I have this piece, and I could get some training and volunteer and then kind of create this program about suicide prevention and destigmatizing mental illness, because nobody in my world, and nobody I knew was talking about it. I thought I was the only idiot in the world dealing with this, and it turns out I wasn't. So I had this idea, and I did it at Baruch College in New York City. Somebody said yes after, like, probably 1,000 no's, and I didn't know how it was going to go. It was an lecture hall, theater with the lights on, super weird, and we did the educational component at the end, and then this young man came up to me at the end, waited for everyone to leave, and was basically like, Josh, thanks for doing this. I've been depressed for as long as I can remember. I've been thinking about suicide for the past couple months, and I thought it was normal, and now I know it's not, so I'm going to go to the counseling center and ask for and get some help. And then in my head, I was like, man, if I had to go through all this to help this one kid, it was so worth it, you know? So that kind of set me on this path of going out and doing this more and more and more. And so the first semester of the next school year, which would have been 2011-12, I got a chance to speak at 4 universities. And then 17, the next semester, I got to go to Hawaii to do a leadership conference for youth. And then at this point, I think last semester of the last school year, and I do, you know, I speak at conferences and communities and high schools, colleges, middle schools, sometimes elementary schools, at-risk youth, juvies. I gave my 250th presentation, and I'm just in the beginning of my 7th year, and so it's kind of sprouted into these books, which I mentioned. There's a memoir as well that kind of launched everything called The Gospel According to Josh, and then there's some mental health-based curriculum called Changing Minds, and now we have a podcast, which Jillian was a guest on, and which her episode hasn't launched yet, but we launched the podcast earlier this week, and just getting involved in writing policy for my kid's school district, and just kind of anywhere I can get involved, so it's kind of a living, and it's a calling, and it's just something to do and merge my creative talents and the things that I'm good at and kind of create this niche and fill in some gaps where there are big gaps. And I'm just finding ways where I can fill in those gaps with what I do. So that's kind of that. And it was very long.
Wow. That's a lot. A very interesting story there. We got a lot out of it. We have to run to our first break right now, though. I want everyone to know you're listening to a conversation with Joshua Rivadal. As he described, he's the creator and founder of Changing Minds, a mental health-based curriculum, and the I'm Possible Project. You can look his books up online. Also, Joanne Diaz is one of the contributors to his third book, which is out next week. And we're going to go to a break. I'm Jeannie Murphy and Talented People. When we get back, we're going to hear a little bit more about how he got this all put together and how was he able to get himself literally off the deck and then move forward helping others again, speaking around the world. All right, stay with us.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With 3 great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon.
Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use. Let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
This is Chamber President Chris Phelan inviting you to the 29th Annual Business and Home Expo with our Restaurant Showcase. This wonderful event will happen on Thursday, November 9th at our new location, Next Level Arena on Case Boulevard in Flemington from 2 to 7 p.m. If you're a business or organization and would like to participate, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or visit our website at huntertonchamber.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is Talented People. I'm Jeannie Murphy, and our guests both calling in today are on the line. Joshua Rivadel, author and speaker, creator and founder of Changing Minds, a mental health-based curriculum, and the I'm Possible Project. And one of the books that he has out just next week's coming out has about 50 different stories from 50 different contributors, and one of them is on the line. Her name is Joanne Diaz. Let's take a second to follow back up about, you know, how you ended up into this position of really leading and speaking around the country. How did you get yourself back on track? I understand, you know, that you called your mother after you were literally hanging off a four-story building. You said that you were ready to take your own life. Mm-hmm. And then you got back, and then you wanted to be around positive people. You said that. You said that you could lean on your mother for, you know, guidance on resources and so on. And how that was 7 years ago?
That would have been 6.5 years ago. Yeah.
And you went from almost one extreme to the other, went from having, you know, yourself about to give up to inspiring everyone through your books.
Mm. Yeah, well... there was a lot of things. So I was journaling every day. That was really important. I'm a big fan of creativity. You know, I don't think when one is in crisis or when one is grieving or when one is going through something really heavy or traumatic or whatever, I'm a big fan of talk therapy, which was very helpful, which is I'm still in talk therapy today. I see I believe she's a PhD, but also a licensed professional counselor. But there's more to it, you know. You need to do more than that. And so for me, you know, a little bit of exercise, eating right was important. Creativity, I think, is big for anybody and everybody, whatever you do. I'm a writer, so I was writing, journaling, doing a little creative writing as well. And then, but whatever gets you there, make a macaroni necklace, do a tap dance. It doesn't really matter. And then, you know, hanging out with the good people, ditching the negative people, a lot of self-development. I got into some more classes on neuroscience and remapping the brain and basically teaching an old dog new tricks, more or less.
How do you feel about medication? How do you feel about medication?
You know, I'm okay with medication. but with a caveat, right? So I actually recently started taking medication, psychiatric medication, for the first time in October of 2016. And the reason for that was in part because of my depression, but because we had a traumatic event in our family, a death by homicide, and so I was spending a lot of time trying to take care of everybody else and not myself, and so I was having a hard time accessing the coping skills that I've developed over the years to just cope with the day-to-day and to live life. And so so I take something called Wellbutrin. I take sort of a middle-of-the-road dosage, 300 milligrams. I tried 450, and that made me shake and lose weight, and 150 wasn't doing it. My thing is this. If you know, you need to be, as a medical consumer, whether you're broken leg, you have cancer, or anxiety and panic attacks, like, you are your best advocate. So anytime you go to the doctor and somebody, if somebody shoves a pill bottle, talks to you for 5 minutes and shoves a pill bottle in your face, you need to run, not walk out of there, run. But if you have somebody who's willing to talk to you and wants to do stuff holistically and try meds and try what's going to work, definitely, meds are okay. Some meds are meant for long term. Some meds are meant for short term. Some are meant to be managed. We've always got to check our levels. I'm constantly making, you know, kind of thinking week by week, like, okay, how are the levels? Am I doing okay? That kind of a thing. So I'm cool with medication. I don't really like the way it's sort of positioned in the United States. I know there's other countries where pharma companies are not allowed to have commercials on television, that kind of a thing, because it's healthcare. It's not like, you know, it's not the Thighmaster. You know, we need oversight and not try to shove stuff on people. So I'm okay with medication, as long, with a caveat.
Right. Well, the reason I asked is just because I know a lot of people out there who have challenging feelings one way or the other. It may not be as extreme as suicide, but just, you know, anxiety, like you say, panic attacks and everything else. And then they see someone like you who, like, now you've dealt with a homicide and suicide of your father and your own, you know, mental challenges, really. And sometimes people would just sit there and say, yeah, well, it sounds easy to just hang around positive people, you know, but, you know, what else can you do to really pick yourself up? Like, you know, and what... I was just going to ask you to share with us from, you know, one of your stories. Do you have a story that pops into mind, and we want to ask Joanne to share her story, one that, you know, really, really kind of floored you when you were reading all of these, you know, contributors' stories?
There was a few. I think the category that really floored me was the schizophrenia category, because I think me, you know, somebody who's very self-aware and somebody who's very aware of social justice issues and different kinds of mental illness, I just didn't know a lot about schizophrenia. And I didn't realize that I knew, but I didn't really put two and two together, that not everybody with schizophrenia is, like, on the street drooling and homeless and, you know, and I say that without any judgment. You know, people get there for a variety of reasons, but... I just didn't, you know, the people who are in my book, our book, are just go-getters and interesting, and they know their limitations, and they know what they can do well, and they know what they can't. And that's just like anything else, right? I mean, mm-hmm. We kind of put these labels on people. Oh, she's got diabetes or schizophrenia or one arm, and so therefore she can't do this or that. But what can that person do? What part of that is an asset rather than a liability? And I think that's what's cool about especially the schizophrenia category, because the people who I have in my book, in this book, our book, have turned their liability into an asset, and that was just huge for me.
Let's have an example. Share us. Tell us what you mean.
Well, there's a woman who, and she kind of expounded upon this, A, in the book, but also I had her on my podcast, and that's actually up. That's Danielle Hark, I believe, episode 9. And she... It's really fascinating because she lived on the streets in New York City for a couple years and did lots of drugs and then turned her life around, got into rehab and had kids and a husband, and then her schizophrenia came on at 36. And so she says, and so she figured, you know, treatment and medication and education and therapy and she still managed after her diagnosis to homeschool her children, and take care of her elderly parent. Takes care of her elderly parents. She's very involved in her religious church community, and says, and I think this is really cool. I'm not super religious, but she says, "I suffer for God," and we pulled that out and we said, she's like, I suffer not. I'm not willingly suffering, but I know that I will because of anxiety and my schizophrenia. But I do this because I can connect to other people and tell them that they're not alone and that they're okay and that there's support. And so I've had to go through this so I can serve others. And that was so powerful. And that somebody who I think the picture of schizophrenia is like I said, a homeless, drooling screamer, whatever.
Is that multiple personalities? Like, I'm not really sure. Schizophrenia,
no,
what is that?
It's hallucination.
Okay.
It's sensitivity to light and sound, and it's when someone's going through an episode, it's like psychosis. So they may be a lot of times schizophrenia is manifested in religious fervor. So somebody's super religious and banging their drum and sees God and the potato chips and
God,
you know.
I'm not laughing at it. I'm just actually picturing some very, very, very close family members. But go ahead.
Well,
not me.
those ridges, sour cream potato chips are not Jesus.
Yes.
They're not.
That's funny.
No, but seriously, just chiming in here, joking aside, I don't know if you know, Jeannie, there were some stories in the news a couple years ago where it was like a nanny who had, murdered these kids, and it was like she thought the devil was telling her to kill these kids, and it was later, she was diagnosed with schizophrenia.
There
so
you go.
Insane.
No, thank you for the clarification. No, I absolutely, I'm literally on the edge of my seat here, as I'm sure our listeners are, trying to learn more, because, this is why we have you all, the experts on the show, to tell us about it, so go ahead. I can see where you would really learn something. And then, like you said, and then she was able to actually focus and maintain her life, which must be hard enough just to be in recovery from, like you said, substance abuse or whatever. She was a drug addict.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, there was some substance abuse issues and I just think some life issues that sort of go beyond, sort of mental illness or anything like that. But she was dealing with a lot and yet, here she is these years later. I think maybe she's 15 years into the diagnosis, and just really powerful. And there's just a couple others. There's a couple eating disorder stories I think that are really interesting, and self-harm and just how they've come out of it and how they use these. And there's some poetry in the book. And my story, I call it Taking Dwayne for a Run, and I just... It's hard to describe depression sometimes because it's like, oh, it's you're sad and you're down and you don't want to go anywhere. And that's not what my depression looks like. A lot of times it's just this I can almost describe it as this nagging pain behind my eye, this nagging little headache that lasts for three months. I mean, it's not literally feeling like a headache, but it's kind of how to this just long, elongated thing. And so Dwayne, I give my depression a name, Dwayne, although I don't really in real life. And so he and I are talking back and forth, and he's being really nasty to me. He's calling me names, and then I explain to the reader that the reason he's calling me these names and stuff is because I haven't been treating him well. I haven't taken him for a run. I'm not listening to the music that he likes, and sort of expounding a little bit on the coping skills that I've neglected for a bit. And then he comes back, and he's like, "Well, have a drink and do this and do that." And I'm like, no, I can't do that. And then there's just a cute little moment where I'm like, because I give depression the name Dwayne, and I have a cigarette in the story because that's sort of a cheap antidepressant, as it were. It mimics some antidepressant qualities. And true story. And,
interesting.
And so I'm like, okay, so I'm going to have a cigarette. And then, I say in the story, my kidney and my heart, my kidneys and my heart are pissed off and are threatening to shut down if I don't stop smoking. And they've asked to remain nameless for the purposes of this story. So it's just kind of a cute little thing. And then we decide at the end that Dwayne and I are going to go into couples therapy and talk things out and get back on track. And then we go for a run, and that's kind of how it ends the story, which is kind of putting a more positive, fun, funny storytelling kind of a deal to what I think is there is a lot of misconception about.
I just have to say, this is Joanne here, because I've read both of the volumes that Josh is referring to. And so I read about the story about Dwayne, and I just have to say, I love the humor, because as Jeannie knows, you know, even though you are talking and dealing with a serious issue, whether it's you, me, someone else, you know, I always find humor in something, and I love the humor in it because it's very real. And when you're dealing with depression or bipolar or schizophrenia or whatever, you do feel like it's like another person, right? It's like it's not yourself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but it's funny. And reading your story, it just, you know, it just lightens the mood and it totally engages the reader. And I highly commend you because I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Joanne, yes, and I just would like to ask Joanne, why don't you share your story with us?
Sure. I currently have 9 children. My oldest child is 11. My youngest is 1.
Pull your phone closer, Joanne. Pull your phone closer. You're a little bit low in the tone.
Okay, I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Better?
Better.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. And so I had experienced my first case of postpartum depression with my 4th child, and I didn't even know I had it. Long story short, my sister, who was a nurse, came up to me and said, you know, I think based off of what I've been seeing in you and how you're acting that you have this, and I was really irritated. And I went home and I Googled the symptoms, and sure enough, I was like, wow, I am having some of these you know, side effects that I didn't even realize. I had always thought of depression as being sad. I wasn't sad, but I had other symptoms of depression. And so I went to the doctor, got officially diagnosed, and then began the road to recovery, per se. And that was, at the time, I felt it was a severe case. I had experienced, you know, some suicidal thoughts and thoughts of harming my baby and things like that. However, I just recently, a little over a year ago, when I had the birth of my 9th child, I had a very severe case of postpartum depression where I actually put myself into the hospital because I knew exactly what it was. And that was much more severe for me. And thank God, you know, with the help of family and community and my husband, I was able to get over it. You know, I'm still dealing with it. I call it the wave in my book that I wrote. And it was great because in the end, I took it and I tried to do something with it. I started blogging on my mom blog about postpartum depression. I wrote my first book on postpartum depression. And then Josh found me on Twitter. And it was fantastic because I got to be pulled into, you know, this wonderful opportunity with 50 other people and Josh to contribute, you know, just a part of my story and collaborate with him in the hopes of, you know, breaking stigma around mental illness, whatever type of mental illness it is, and just, you know, looking to help people out. So it's been an interesting couple of years.
Well, we're really glad to have you actually sharing the stories, both of you. Let us know a little bit more about the future. How would someone go about getting copies of your books, Josh?
Yeah, so on this particular book, we have iampossibleproject.com. So iampossibleproject.com/pre-order. The first book is at iampossibleproject.com/1. And this book, for the future, if we archive this, the book that Joanne's going to be in, it currently is at /pre-order, but then it's going to be at /2, T-W-O. And it's on Amazon, Kindle, Nook. I mean, you can get it online anywhere. I think you're getting a better deal on my site, but get it anywhere. If you get free shipping, why not? Go for it. Go for that Amazon Prime thing. But they're all over the place. But just, you know, hop onto the website, and there's some pretty robust stuff there.
Excellent. What about now speaking? Let's go back to that. And what, can you let people out there know a little bit about how to get in touch with you if they are interested in having you appear?
Sure. Yeah. You can go on my website, and there's a contact form there. I don't mind speaking my email either. It's josh@iampossibleproject.com. not super clever, so I mean, if you really wanted to find me, I'm sure you could anyway. But you can get in touch with me, and if you're looking for a mental health, suicide prevention, anti-bullying curriculum, I do some stuff on entrepreneurship and mental health in the workplace too. Any way I can help and be of service, give me an email. Give me a ring. I'd be happy to help.
All right, good. Well, we're going to go to a break right now, real quick. This is the last break in our segment here, but we'll be back in just a couple minutes to continue our conversation here. Stay with us on Talented People.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hey, Pat. Know between the two of us, we know how to screw in a light bulb.
Come on, Steve. We can do better than that. Well, at least I can. Tell you what, you sit there and look pretty, and I'll fix it.
Listen to you, big guy. Better yet, let's get everyone to listen to Home Sweet Home with me, Steve Bailey, Inspector with Brass Tack Home Inspections.
And I'm Pat Gregory, Handyman Extraordinaire with Taskman Home Improvements, every Friday at 11 a.m. Or you can go to our archives and get access to over 50 podcasts. We cover the basement to the attic and everything in between.
You can even call us at 908-237-0410 during our radio program about our home improvement projects. Remember, Home Sweet Home, every Friday at 11 on Hunterdon Chamber Radio.
From the basement to the attic, you're listening to Steve and Patrick. Home sweet home.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
This is Chamber President Chris Phelan inviting you to the 29th Annual Business and Home Expo with our Restaurant Showcase. This wonderful event will happen on Thursday, November 9th at our new location, Next Level Arena on Case Boulevard in Flemington from 2 to 7 p.m. If you're a business or organization and would like to participate, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or visit our website at huntertonchamber.org.
All right, we're back here now on Talented People. I am in studio. I'm just going to say that our just amazing another speaker author is in the house here. Her name's Ann Thornton. She's on television all the time, and Unity Bank is going to be hosting her appearance over at their Washington branch up on 31 on October 26th at 5:30. The bank's actually going to be open, but they're going to allow everybody to come in, network, have some beer and wine, talk, and then at 6:15, Ann's going to rock our world talking about her insider tips on her new book for remodeling and for your home. So she's so much fun anyway. She just walked in. I'm so happy to see her. But I also want to let you all know that all you have to do is look it up online, Unity Bank, Ann Thornton, and you can register. And if you actually sign up by October 20th, you get a free copy of her book. So she'll be there talking for an hour, and then we're going to have a really good time, and she'll be signing, and you can meet her in person, our celebrity here in Hunterdon County. So again, okay, we're back to, it's 3:44 in the afternoon. I'm Jeannie Murphy, my guest calling in today, two guests actually. One is Joshua Rivendell, and he is the creator and founder of Changing Minds, a mental health-based curriculum, and the I'm Possible Project. He's been telling us about his challenges in this lifelong, I want to say, really a conquest to become happier and to be able to share from his depression and a lot of things that have gone wrong in his life, including his father who committed suicide. And also he says that there was a recent homicide in his family, which is, I can't even imagine dealing with one, not either both of those. And so he was talking about his books and his plays. And then also one of the contributors to his book, her name is Joanne Diaz. She was just telling her story, and they're both back here on the line. So this is the end of our show. We have a couple, like almost 10 minutes left to talk. So I wanted to ask you guys to tell us what you'd like to speak about and what you'd like to share with our listeners for the next 15 minutes or so.
I want to share whatever Joanne wants to share. So, Joanne, you go ahead first.
just for you, because I thought about it during the break. Sorry to totally interject. I just wanted to mention, Jeannie, that one of the things that I love about both of the volumes in Josh's books, the latest books, is that he deals with, the contributors, are just, they span, obviously, like he had mentioned, several different mental illnesses, but age-wise, like, for example, Josh, what is the youngest? There's a young, like, couple young people. How young are your younger ones?
I got a kid in there who, I don't know if he's still 15, but he wrote the story at the time, 15. So he's 16 at the most, and I've got another one who's 16 going on 17. So we do have some young people in there for sure.
What do they write about?
Sorry, go ahead, Jeannie.
I just asked what they were writing about.
One was writing about being, the girl was writing about being 16, 17, bullied, and her anxiety and depression and how she lost her uncle to suicide and how she manages, and just very hopeful stories. She's just really smart as a whip and just really interesting. Yep. And the boy talks about his mental illness and kind of some anxiety and depression, but it's also kind of framed with the idea of what is masculinity and his experience with that, and the fact that you can still be a masculine male and still be a young guy and yet be vulnerable and talk about these issues. So it's just really powerful from young people.
Yeah, and my point, too, is I think that what's so amazing is that the reader could be anyone, right? You know, you could be a teenager, you could be, you know, older, you could be a family member of somebody who, you know, you just don't know how to help somebody who has mental illness. That's what I love about the books, is that there's such a range of audience of people who could benefit from the books, and that's why I think it's just so fantastic what you're doing.
Yes, and I'm reading the book, like, it's going through it right now. I also wanted to ask you, Josh, how do you find your other authors? Like, where do you usually get them from?
From a variety of places. I mean, some of them are from my touring, you know, kind of going around and speaking, and so I find people that way. Some of them are my friends. Some of them are people who I've paid attention to for years and years in their respective field, and some of them I went through, you know, like Joanne, I found her on Twitter. Some people I found, like, on The Mighty, which is, like, a mental health website, and different bloggers and stuff. So, I mean, I kind of have different ways, and it's always kind of a challenge, but damn worth it, so...
Yeah.
I think it was just awesome. You know, when Josh came to me, I was kind of like, okay, who is this? You know? Mm-hmm. And I went onto his website and I started to learn more about him, and I was totally intrigued. And then we started to talk. And, you know, of course, Jeannie can appreciate this because Jeannie has published her own books as well. She's in the whole PR world. So she knows how hard it is to write and publish a book, get a publisher, or self-publish, whatever. You know, it just takes so much time and effort to do that whole process. And so it was great when Josh came to me because I had just published my first book, which was just so grueling, you know.
Yes.
It was great and very rewarding, but such a grueling process. So for Josh to come in and pull all these people together, and he's basically, you know, emailing us and Facebooking us and telling us what he needs, and it's very, you know, quick and easy, and then I'm like, boom, and it's like, it was so great, you know, from the other end, you know, not being the person going through all the work, but he did just put so much work into it, and he still does. As he mentions, he has the podcast interviewing, you know, all of the authors, or most of them, and then, you know, just the promotion of the book and keeping us all in the loop. We have this, you know, he has this Facebook page set up for us and a group set up for us. And it's just been really amazing.
Now, I can't even imagine organizing that, but I will, you know, that's just awesome. I'm really glad to have you guys on today. I just want to touch on one more thing. I'm looking at one of the, I think it's close to the end of the book here, and it says there are 5 60-minute modules, and you have them listed as the basics of mental health, developing coping skills, storytelling and support systems, living with / supporting a person with a mental health condition, and then helping yourself or a friend in suicidal crisis. Josh, where do people go to access those modules?
So they're going to go to the website and they're going to talk to me about it, because that can be for school, that can be for, I'm going to be working in a hospital and also training a fire department early next year. And so...
those are your topics? Are you saying those are your speaking topics?
They are not. No, they're not. And what's... So they access this stuff through the website, and then I make it available to them when we talk about how they want to have these modules. So I'm not the only person who can facilitate or teach these modules.
Mm-hmm.
I have trainers who I've trained to then be the facilitator, and I've had as young as 16.
Wow.
The train-the-trainer model that I have is... It's very paint-by-numbers, and it's very easy, and it doesn't require a lot of heavy lifting, even though they still need to be knowledgeable and know about mental illness and the different topics. There's also teaching moments that can happen from the audience, which I think is really great, and that's just supports knowledge retention. So it's a mental health-based curriculum, and most often done in schools like middle school, high school, and some college, and... And it really depends on how people want it to look on site. And so, yes, I will also be developing video-based modules so people can just do it like one-on-one. They mm-hmm. can kind of do it for their own personal development if they so choose. But right now it's more of like a facilitated conversation, kind of not lecture, but, this group discussion. There's an improv in every single module. And so far, I mean, it's been pretty successful, having only been out officially for maybe 8 months. So,
wow. No, that sounds great. I'm very, very much interested in learning more about that too. So, we only have another 2 or 3 minutes. Anything else you guys would like to leave everybody with? I would like to ask you something, just if you don't mind, to tell us a little bit about emotional intelligence as to your training on it.
Sure. So I went up to Yale and did some training in this. And basically, it's the way that I kind of talk about it. It's just learning how to identify emotions and giving them names. And you know, instead of saying I'm hungry and bored, it might be I'm angry and disillusioned. And so you kind of learn vocabulary around your moods and your emotions, and then you kind of learn tools and tactics and tips to kind of move forward based on the vocabulary of what you're feeling. So it's learning how to identify emotions, name them, and then do something about them.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, so much to learn. What about like when you're talking about, you know, typically kids learn this stuff in like middle school or so. Do you think that like our educational system is keeping up with the changes or what we're learning about all of the sciences of this?
No, they're definitely not. And I think it's really important to have this education. There's several other kinds of curriculum like this, maybe two beyond mine, but I think it's really important. I mean, I want mine in your school, but like, it doesn't matter. Like, I want the information out there, right? So like, we need to talk to kids about emotional intelligence. We need to make time for mental health and talking mental illness and suicide and prevention, because if these things aren't being dealt with, then there is no school.
Right.
You know, you're not going to get, the kids are not going to matriculate. You know, a kid dies by suicide in school or outside of school, but still attached to the school year. The people that surround them in that classroom, their grades dip too, and they go into crisis mode. So we need to prevent this from all sides, and I think the schools need to stop putting their heads in the sand and saying, well, I don't want to be liable. Well, develop a good policy and talk to the experts, and, like, you won't be liable because nothing's going to happen. I think you can sense the frustration in my voice. But, I think, and we can make time for this in health. We can make time for this as an assembly. I know there's limited time for that. We can make time for it at home. We can make time for it as a parent night. I've even had one teacher who found a way to integrate some of the lessons from my curriculum into her math class. You know, so there's ways to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to get talking about it, because there's too many people in pain that don't need to be. And if we're talking dollars and cents, if you don't want to talk about emotion, you want to talk about dollars and cents, there is so much money being lost to productivity every single year because of untreated or misdiagnosed or nobody's talking about their depression, anxiety. So we need to get to cracking on that stuff.
I agree completely. Sure. I appreciate your book series and all your contributors and the time you take. I'm sure it must have been an undertaking to put that all together and get everybody to have, you know, their deadline, their word count, and have you manage it and make sure that everybody who's reading it understands the different situations for each of the different, you know, contributors. So I just want to thank you for being here today. I want to wish you the best. Keep in touch and let us know what's going on. So if something news out there that you want to come back on the show and share with us, we welcome you back, Joshua Rivadell. And then also Joanne Diaz, thank you for bringing Joshua to us. And I hope you guys stay well and continued success and stay positive and happy and keep us posted.
Thank you, Jeannie. It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having us.
It's our pleasure here. Thanks all of you out there for listening. And thanks, best wishes to you both and to all you guys listening. We'll talk to you next week on The Talented People. Thanks so much.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
You're listening to HunterdonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.HunterdonChamberRadio.com for a complete listing of our programs.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
And the president has been clear on this tragedy, and so have I. I spoke at length about this heartbreaking situation on Sunday night, and I stand with the president. And I stand by those words.
Vice President Mike Pence today speaking about the violence in Charlottesville, North Carolina, and condemning hate coming from all sides of the Trump administration.
And we're also praying that in America that we will not allow the few to divide the many. The strength of the United States of America is always strongest, as the president has said so eloquently, when we are united.
The Coast Guard responding after an Army Black Hawk helicopter carrying five crew members crashed 2 miles off the coast of Oahu. The soldiers were taking part in a training exercise when Wheeler Army Airfield lost communications last night. Officials say debris was spotted shortly after. It's not clear if weather played a part. USA Radio News.
All day long you hear ads for prostate pills, all promising to end your prostate troubles fast and easy. But how do you know which pills really work and which ones are garbage? The answer is ProstateReport.com. We took every prostate pill on the market, all the top brands, and spent a fortune to have them laboratory tested to see what is really in each brand. The results were jaw-dropping. You'll be shocked when you see what garbage some of the leading brands are really selling you. So go to ProstateReport.com and see the lab reports and reviews the prostate pill companies don't want you to see. Find out which pills really work and which ones are just a big waste of money.
The funeral mass is at St. Paul Cathedral in Oakland, Pennsylvania. It's open to the public as space allows. Meanwhile, retirement appears to be going pretty well for former President Obama and the former First Lady.
Outside of Parliament, but this man said he was at Parliament and the situation changed immediately.
We were walking in the garden of the Parliament. It was beautiful and the sun was coming out, and suddenly it took a second, the entire area, people started running and crying, and the police officers. I mean, it's amazing, the transformation.
One person has been confirmed dead so far in the attack. Judge Neil Gorsuch continuing his testimony on Capitol Hill in front of the Senate Judiciary. The judge said no one's above the law.
Would he be subject to prosecution?
Senator, I'm not going to speculate.
But he's not above the law.
No man is above the law.
This is USA Radio News.
Okay, keep your eyes closed.
Okay.
I want to show you my first ever painting.
Ooh, all right.
Okay. Open your eyes.
Oh, that's a lot of colors. Mm-hmm. And shapes.
So be honest. What do you think?
Well, I like how if you switch to Geico, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance.
Oh, yeah, that's...